This is Closer Look. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Rose Scott. The national conversation about police and the use of deadly force has intensified over the past year. Now, a lot has focused on the way authorities interact with individuals diagnosed with a mental disorder. Well, here a local organization, Spirit of Autism, works with and trains public safety officers on how to recognize and interact with people who have autism spectrum disorder. Debbie Taylor and Austin Harris are part of that group, and they join us now in studio. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for having us on today.
I want to begin with defining autism spectrum disorder, because that covers many conditions, correct?
Correct. It is a spectrum disorder. It's very, very challenging to even define, because sometimes the experts don't even agree on what mm-hmm. that is, but it is a developmental disability, a complex disorder of the brain and the nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Can you cite one for me, just for someone listening? Are we talking about, is Asperger's, is that one?
Asperger's, mm-hmm. On the high end of, it's classified as high functioning to low functioning on the spectrum, and I'll let Austin talk about Asperger's. Mm-hmm.
For me, I actually have Asperger's syndrome, so I'm high functioning, and the term high functioning means that I can do day-to-day stuff. I can go to school, go to college, I can drive a car, do pretty much normal everyday things and take care of myself. I have the ability to take care of myself pretty well, but every now and then I have problems where I will need intervention or assistance from other people who I trust and who I know, so it can be kind of tricky out there.
So I can understand why this is obviously close to you, but Debbie, I want to bring you back into the conversation too, because this is close to you as well. How so?
I have two teenagers on the spectrum, and I think that Austin and I provide a unique voice because I'm a parent of two autistic teenagers, but we're also volunteers with DeKalb Fire Rescue Reserve. Mm-hmm. And so being emergency responders and the experience I've had through my children and Austin's personal experience provide a unique perspective for people that have to respond. So we're not there telling them to ignore their training or put themselves at risk or being one of those drama-laden, you know, mommy bloggers that says, you know, you should do things differently, but we have a true responder experience as well.
Mm-hmm. Let me pick up, Debbie, with you for a moment. When an officer responds to a situation, even if they know someone is on the spectrum, the old saying is, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Right.
So it's going to be very hard for an officer to know how this particular person is going to respond to communication cues, even if the officer's had training. So how do you try to at least narrow things down so an officer knows somewhat how to begin?
The training that we provide is 2 hours long, and it's that way for a reason, because we can't just hold up a checklist of 1 through 10 and say, hey, if this person answered yes to 7 of them, bam, this is how you respond. You know, it's not mm-hmm. that easy. So we do provide an array of tools and tools and skills for officers to recognize, and we always say you may see one of these, 10 of these, all of these in someone, but it's tools for their toolbox so that they can size up the situation and hopefully recognize, you know, what's happening so that they can adapt their response.
And in the case of someone who is able to respond to the officer, mm-hmm. let's say someone in your situation, mm-hmm. Does the training also help them learn how to communicate with a police officer, what the responses are when an officer approaches you?
It doesn't necessarily help the autistic person to take training, but it helps when the officer has an understanding of what's happening to the autistic person or autistic individual, because that encompasses the fact that the autistic individual will now have a relation, because the person is able to understand now that this person's having a problem, the autistic individual is having a problem. So that kind of changes the approach of an officer. For me, I studied criminal justice, so I also have kind of a feel of what law enforcement officers go through, not totally, but for a person like me, say you approached me and I was the individual that was autistic and having a problem, and the officer came up to me, and they would, with our training, they would have a better understanding of how to interact with me, how to help me, how to get me away and out of crisis mode. So,
and a lot of times it's as simple as recognizing sensory issues. We mm-hmm. always start with that because that is like 98% of what we see as bad behavior in someone with autism. They're responding to an overwhelming environment. They hear things 10 times louder than we do. They hear everything in their face, all mm-hmm. the background noises. Mm-hmm. They can't filter out what should be background mm-hmm. noise. So imagine now, you know, day to day, that's very challenging. But mm-hmm. imagine an emergency situation with lights mm-hmm. and sirens. So it could be as simple as turning off lights and sirens, mm-hmm. getting the person away from the chaos and the noise, mm-hmm. not having 10 responders circling around them mm-hmm. saying, what's wrong, you know, mm-hmm. look at me, give me eye contact, doing all those things. Something simple as that could open the door for a new mm-hmm. response.
Mm-hmm. When you all are working with the authorities, what's the most common question they have or questions they have for you all?
What causes autism, mm-hmm. which yeah. we don't spend yeah. a lot of time talking about because there's, you know, they don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many unknowns to autism right now. We still don't have a complete understanding of what causes it. There are many theories and many ideas out there, but it still has yet to be defined as what the cause is. So
I think one of the common things that officers and fire rescue do is sort of use Austin to pick his brain because mm-hmm. I know mm-hmm. everything I know from trying my best to get into the world that my children live in and understand them and research, mm-hmm. but Austin lives it firsthand. Mm-hmm. So they really ask him, is this what it's like mm-hmm. for you? Mm-hmm. What could we do to help you? Would you respond this way?
And mm-hmm. and have you already received feedback? And what have they said?
Oh, we've actually had lots of feedback from it. We did 10 training sessions with Sandy Springs Police and Fire Rescue, and we had a couple officers, an incident happened that week that we were training, and they were able to de-escalate it and use the training that we taught them to provide the emotional support and comfort for the individual they were helping.
There's a tough kind of thing, though, that could happen at some point where the lights and sirens, I wanted to pick up on that because that can, mm-hmm. that's even for someone who doesn't have autism, mm-hmm. that's an overwhelming mm-hmm. sensory experience mm-hmm. right there if you're pulled mm-hmm. over at night with all that going mm-hmm. on. And at the same time, if let's say you're pulled over to the side of the road, mm-hmm. those flashing lights are there for your safety and for mm-hmm. the officer's safety, mm-hmm. and sometimes the siren is too. Mm-hmm. So then you have that kind of catch-22.
Right. There is no concrete. We don't yeah. tell people to mm-hmm. turn off lights and sirens. We say the situation may mm-hmm. allow you to do that, but we always teach safety first, mm-hmm. always. And it's, you know, it's responder safety mm-hmm. and the person's safety that they're interacting mm-hmm. with. Just like we talk about restraining methods that are dangerous, we say, am I telling you not to restrain somebody with autism? No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm saying check their condition frequently, mm-hmm. check their airway. Right. Mm-hmm. This may happen.
So in a situation where an officer feels like, oh, I have to keep the lights and sirens on, and mm-hmm. I know that's going to be overwhelming mm-hmm. for somebody, does the training include, okay, you're not dealt the best hand here. How do mm-hmm. you de-escalate things mm-hmm. even when it's tough like that?
Absolutely. And sometimes that might mean a distraction or redirection method. Mm-hmm. If sometimes it might mean removing the person from the environment that they're in. But we always say, you know, on scene that may not be ideal for you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we give other tricks and tools as sort of backup, I suppose.
And we always tell the first responders, always go with your training. We're just giving you extra information, extra knowledge, extra ability to take care of the situation. And if you can, this training will provide some information that you may not have had if that came to the point where it would happen.
You mentioned Sandy Springs. Any other departments that you are working with? And I imagine also, do you have other individuals and first responders that are reaching out to you all saying, we need this service as well?
Yeah, we have trained about 30 departments last yeah. year, right?
Yeah.
And including
in the metro area?
Yes.
Yes.
And well, some not so metro, yeah. like Floyd County yeah. and Carrollton mm-hmm. and Villerick and things like that. But
we've trained hospital staff, we've trained hospital security, We've done fire departments, police departments.
Disaster response. That's disaster what I was going to say. That's a big one. The people mm-hmm. that get together in the community mm-hmm. to do disaster preparedness mm-hmm. and say a tornado or something came mm-hmm. through. We teach mm-hmm. them search and rescue mm-hmm. tips and how to recognize search water first, mm-hmm. things like that.
Is this a business for you all as well? Are you able to make some money with this? I imagine it takes a lot of time and some money because you're traveling and you may want to have information that mm-hmm. you want to present to them, whether it's in a tablet or a notebook or something. Mm-hmm.
Our wish is to not have to charge for mm-hmm. it because mm-hmm. We just believe that everyone in Atlanta and Georgia need this training, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we do have travel and leave behind materials that we print up. We're developing an app for people so that they can just, you know, quick reference on their phone and things like that. So it's, you know, our goal is to get some kind of sponsorships or a way to keep it free for emergency responders, but it's not always free.
Austin, I wonder if this has happened in the training so far, because there are probably first responders who have loved ones who are on the spectrum somewhere. Have you had anybody say that to you, and has that helped you in developing the training because you have somebody who's seen it from both sides?
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. We have had several people come up to us and even say, "I, they don't have a diagnosis now, but I think this person in my family may have a form of autism or Asperger's syndrome or just something related to it." And they come up to us and their eyes just open up. And that moment when you see a person's eyes open up, it's really heartwarming to feel that the training is getting out there and it's really doing what it's supposed to do.
Has there been anybody, Debbie, who's said, "Oh, you know, I know what this is like for my loved one. I know what it's like for me as a first responder. Maybe here are some things we could try that you end up adding to the training as an idea you maybe hadn't thought of before."
We mm-hmm. always make it known that the training is a fluid process. And as new research comes out and as people in the field, you know, I'm an emergency responder, I'm an EMT, but I'm not a police officer. Mm-hmm. So we always leave it open. If you think of something we didn't cover, we could have said right. differently, a new mm-hmm. way to do scenarios that, you know, would help drive it home for you better. We definitely leave that door open. Mm-hmm.
As we wrap up, Debbie and Austin, I want to get your thoughts on what you all have learned from training with the officers and the other first responders and how it's helped you.
Well, for me, it's helped me become more able to interact with other people, and it's helped teach me more interaction skills, which are hard for a person with autism. So it's helped me interact and learn how to interact with other people.
And for me, I would just say it's definitely opened my eyes to some of the things that people in the field as responders face, and having to make those split-second decisions. Mm-hmm. And it helps me adapt the mm-hmm. training to really meet their needs and not just be a lecture.
And does mm-hmm. it also make you feel safer with when your children go out and you're not mm-hmm. around them as well?
Yes, it does.
And with the rate of people on the spectrum, the rate of diagnosis growing, this is just going to be something that law enforcement and first responders are going to have mm-hmm. to face more often, right?
Yeah. This is not going away. It probably will never go away, and it will continue to become more and more.
We've been speaking with Debbie Taylor and Austin Harris of the group Spirit of Autism. Thanks to both of you for
being
with us.
We
really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.